Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Debra and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. I'm Dr. Debra.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
I can see you. You can see me.
We got a new monitor in this place, and it's like before I saw half of Debra. Like it was like...
And ditto.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, yeah, just at the top up. So now it's so nice because we can actually like look at each other.
We can make funny faces at each other,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'll make you laugh inappropriately.
I could, like, go to town with that. Like, I could really, like, do some crazy stuff.
I know you could.
So funny. So tell me about your weekend.
Went to San Diego to visit a girlfriend of mine. She had pretty much from ground zero redid an entire house. So she moved into the Leucadia area from where she was living. No.
Cool.
And it was beautiful. It was just all a craftsman house and all every little detail was just stunning. I was so happy for her. It's really nice for her.
Aww.
Walking distance to the beach and to the town. And we took the train, which I haven't done in like 9 years.
Oh,
and
wow.
So relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got to get business class, though, because on the way back, you just got a regular ticket. It was standing room only from San Diego all the way to the L.A. train.
Oh, my
thing,
God.
Which is over 2 hours. So from Thousand Oaks, it's a pretty much a 4 hour train ride each way. But it just makes it so relaxing. You don't worry about traffic.
Sure.
We did crossword puzzles. We laughed. We drank some wine.
That's so fun.
Yeah. So it was really nice because otherwise Chris does all the driving usually, and I do all the kvetching.
Exactly.
And then I'm on the iPad, bored out of my mind. I mean, I'm like your worst nightmare as a child. You
really?
Got right? As an adult. I must, because I can't sit, I get spilkas.
Yeah,
I
you can't
sit still in the car. So I have to have something to do.
Yeah.
So this was fun because we got to do things together.
That's so cool.
So
I
really
love
nice.
That idea.
Yeah, I just got back late last night. And so.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I'm rested and tired at the same time. You'll be very proud of me. I did not do 20,000 steps on
either
day off.
Wow.
Shocking.
You needed some little
R&R. I got 18,000. How about you, honey? What'd you do?
Yes, I went to David's stepbrother's wedding in Arizona. It was beautiful. It
you
was
didn't tell me about that.
I know. I forgot about it. It like creeped up. I'm like, oh my God, it's this weekend. So it was great. I mean, it was, the kids were not, no kids were invited. So it was just David and I. And it was in Scottsdale and it was, you know, it was just beautiful. We took a really nice,
so pretty.
Yeah. We took a bike ride in the morning and, you know, saw the mountains and before
it
was like so hot. I was just going to say, then kind of on the way back, it was pretty hot. But most of this guy's, the guy who got married's family's from Canada. So they were like, what the fuck is this weather? They could not get over it. It was so hot to them. They were just like,
where from Canada?
Toronto.
Oh, that's where my parents ended up meeting and my sister was born.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. I never knew that.
International family.
Yeah. So
immigrated from, you know, from Europe stuff.
Right. But Canada, I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was super fun. And I met this really cool newscaster who was at the wedding and we like completely bonded. It was super fun and it was great. Yeah. We got back last night also.
Oh.
So that's good.
Did
weekend.
The boys stay with
They actually, so funny, our normal babysitter, her brother was getting married. So we had like our backup babysitter who brought her sister, which was perfect because it was like...
Four hands are better than two when you've got four little monkey hands, right?
Exactly. And they loved it. They did great. I mean, I missed them more than they missed me, I think, this weekend, which is like probably a first. I know I kept like FaceTiming and it was fun. It was
cute. And my daughter is now officially in Bali.
On her expedition.
Yes, her tantric sex workshop. So she
can
help women's healing in the sexual arena. Yes.
I can't wait to hear. Like, I'm going to pick her brain like no other when she returns.
I know. She's such a sweetie. But she made it to Hong Kong. She visited my niece, Remy.
Oh, cool.
She got there. She ended up running into my sister and my niece who was leaving the visit from Hong Kong at the airport.
No.
When she got there. So she had some time to say hello.
Oh, my
to
God.
Them.
That's so funny.
Isn't that crazy?
Oh, that's great.
It wasn't planned. But
right.
Anyway, so she's there safe and sound. Thank goodness.
That's awesome.
I, of course, get a text message from me. Mom, my ATM card won't work. I'm like, really? I have to deal with this on my... I called the bank and they wouldn't really let me handle it, but they said probably it just was one outlet that didn't work.
Oh, I see.
So then she told me the next day that it was working fine. Thank goodness.
Oh, good.
Okay, but I wasn't sure how I was going to help her.
Right. Because yes. internationally, it's tough. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, anything else? That's
what's crazy is, this is, I'm super excited. So my mom's 70th birthday, I don't know if I told you this, is September 17th. And what I wanted to do for her, she's obsessed with the Emmys. And this year, the Emmys is the 70th Emmys, and it's on her actual birthday.
No way.
So I was like, I've been thinking about this for like a year. And
how
like,
are you
going to
get her
tickets? I got her tickets. We had a friend, and I like basically contacted him like 6 months ago, and please, I'll do anything. I want to do this for my mom.
So David said it's okay for you to have sex with him?
Yeah, exactly. He's like 65. Okay. He's actually my parents' age, so he's 70.
Yeah, so David doesn't care.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And David has zero interest in going to the Emmys at all. It's really funny. But I got tickets, and they're coming out, and we're going to go.
You're going to go too.
Yes.
So the four of you. Mm-hmm. What a treat.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, you'll love that. You just
so
love
excited.
Glitz and glamour.
It's just
and all
so
that.
Much fun. Even just like getting ready was just super exciting for me. So yeah, so
that's
the story.
Awesome. Yeah. You're so sweet. You did that whole surprise. That was that for your dad's?
Oh, yes, exactly. This is a big
there?
One. Yeah. Because I was thinking, I was like, I can't do a party like long distance. It's too hard. And this is really something that she wants. So
that is so sweet.
Yes.
Good job.
Thank you.
Okay.
So
last week. Oh, boy. So that was so heavy. This lovely lady, Marilee McLean, a child advocate, domestic violence expert, national and professional speaker. And she's the author of Prosecuted But Not Silenced, Courtroom Reform for Sexually Abused Children. That woman has been through hell and back. And I don't even know that she ever came back.
I know. Oh, it was awful.
What a story.
I mean, I think it's wonderful that she is trying to help other people who have gone through this and really kind of put her story out there, put her trauma out there so that this does not happen to anybody else. I mean, her story is so painful.
So painful. So heavy. I mean, can imagine just being falsely accused of something and defending yourself when somebody else is doing the abuse.
Right. Exactly.
So awful.
Awful. Awful.
Awful. So if anybody's out there listening who's involved with a sociopath or a narcissist, you know, you might want to grab that if you're having children with them.
Yes,
because
with an issue.
Good to pay attention to what's possible.
Right.
Yeah.
So this week
you do the introduction.
I'm so excited. Yes. Okay. So
the finder of this lovely lady.
So this week we have Dr. Deborah Gilboa. She's an internationally respected parenting and youth development expert, and she's the founder of AskDrG.com. Popularly known as Dr. G, she's an industry leading speaker, author, social influencer, and media personality. She inspires audiences with relatable stories and easy tools to develop crucial life skills in children, teens, and young adults ages 2 to 22. Dr. G is the author of the critically acclaimed book, How to Get the Behavior You Want Without Being the Parent You Hate. Dr. G's Guide to Effective Parenting breaks down 60 key challenges faced by parents of kids primarily in their preteen years. As a television personality, Dr. G gives straightforward advice with a dose of humor that helps wade through the stress, doubt, and guilt that all parents feel at one time or another.
Welcome.
Thank you so much, ladies.
Oh, this is so much fun. First of all, you gave us your book, but also these three little mini books
adorable.
That are so adorable. Teach Respect, That's My Kid. Teach Resilience, Raising Kids Who Can Launch, and Teach Responsibility, and I can't read the bottom, Empower something.
She doesn't have her glasses.
Anyway, those are lovely. So how did you tell us about this book and where it was
generated from
and all that?
So the first book that you mentioned, Get the Behavior You Want Without Being the Parent You Hate, that's my goal, right? I have four kids of my own, and what I'm trying to do is guide their behavior to, as a great grandmother in my practice put it, civilize them, right? But I don't want to do it using the tools that make me feel awful. I don't want to scream all the time. I don't want to nag. I don't want to guilt. I don't, you know, if I can avoid it. It's not that I never get to my last nerve. My kids are very talented in that. It's that I want to have a bunch of strategies so that I don't get there often. Mm-hmm. And what I found in my medical practice, I'm a family doc, is that parents were asking me questions in the office, and most of them were parenting questions. You know, parents rarely asked me, for example, is my child on the right controller medicine for their asthma? They'd say, how do I get my kid to take their medicine when they don't want to?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, instead of asking, is it really true that enough sleep matters for children suffering from ADHD? They would say, I know sleep's important. How do I get them to go to bed and stay there?
Yes.
So I found that I was answering all these parenting questions and that there was no one parenting book out there that I could wholeheartedly recommend, because so many of them spent half the book explaining their philosophy, and you felt very much reading it, or at least I did as a parent, that if I didn't buy into every piece of the philosophy, maybe I shouldn't use the advice. Mm. So I was looking for something that was much more practical, that was sort of an FAQ for parenting. That was about, hey, like one of my favorites is there's a chapter in there. None of the chapters are more than four pages long. There's one chapter in there that says play date trouble. And I give a couple of suggestions for different developmental ages. And then I say, now flush, wash your hands and go back out to the play date, because that kid is still in your home. So the idea being that you're going to pick this up and use it right when you have a question about chores or getting your kiddo into the bath or sibling bickering, because that's how parenting is. It comes up when it comes up.
Right.
And you can't sit down, as much as you may mean to, and read an entire book cover to cover the night you're trying to solve a particular issue.
Mm. Well, that was one thing I was saying to you on the call beforehand. So my mother-in-law sent me your video, and what I loved so much about it was so straightforward. It wasn't a lot of like jibber jabber. It was just like, okay, here's to the point, and like, this is what you do. And I love that, because as parents, we don't have time to sit and like listen to everything. It's just like, we want the answers quickly. So I absolutely loved that.
And right off
and
the
different
bat,
strategies, because different things work with different kids.
Right.
Right. And right off the bat, you talk about respect. Tell us what you mean by respect and why bother.
So the three little book titles that you read, those are what I call the three R's for parents: respect, responsibility, and resilience. If we can teach our kids those three R's, separating it out from the three R's that they are supposed to learn at school, only one of which actually begins with the letter R, but that's a whole other thing. This is a way to look at parenting that doesn't depend on a particular religious or cultural or philosophic viewpoint, to say, I've never met a parent who didn't want their kid to grow up to be respectful and responsible and resilient. So if I can teach my child those three character traits, they're going to do pretty well no matter what their goals or what their definition of happiness is. Respect is the ability to recognize in yourself and in other people worth and value, and show that you know it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay. And you talk a lot about how we're spoiling kids backwards. And I'd love to hear that. I agree. So tell us.
My premise is, and I talked about this a lot in my TED Talk, is that we have gotten to this point, not only affluent parents have gotten to this point where we feel like what we owe our kids is some stuff, especially digital stuff, so that they'll have the same opportunities as everybody else, and achievements, chances to win the trophy in the soccer, even the Pee Wee Soccer League, chances to have the science fair project that looks amazing, to be able to say they were accepted into this thing or that thing. And what we're being really stingy about are opportunities for our kids to try stuff on their own and fail and make their own decisions. And I'd like for us to flip it. As a society, I'm working really hard to convince people that the way to give our kids the path to being the adult that we can really admire, the adult who can succeed, is to be really generous with opportunities for failure, with opportunities for trying their own problem solving, even though we absolutely know what they should do, to withhold telling them what to do so that they have that opportunity to try, and to not worry nearly as much about the stuff and the achievement.
That is so true. That's sort of similar to that phrase, give a child a fish, he'll eat for a day. Teach a child the fish, he'll
eat for life. Exactly.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's really amazing.
Right.
So many people do.
And I talk about that in terms of happiness all the time. You know, you haven't met my 9-year-old, but you know how to make him happy. You give him a candy bar and a Netflix show. But that's 22
London?
And a half minutes of happiness. That doesn't teach him to find and make his own happiness. And it probably doesn't help him turn into the kind of adult that you would want to hire or to be friends with your kid or anything like that.
You're probably going to think this is mean, or maybe you won't. But when my daughter was younger and she would say, I'm bored. And I said, well, you must be boring, because look at how many wonderful opportunities you have in this room to make fun. And then she'd never say it again. She looked at all her toys. And next thing you know, she was totally into her imagination and playing up a storm.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I felt like I was like the
I
meanest
love
parent.
That. My answer is much more self-serving. My answer is, really? I'm so glad, because the bathroom needs to be cleaned.
That's really good.
I like that one.
Me too.
Starting at age five, because at age five, those gloves, and this is in one of those little books that you mentioned, Teach Responsibility, and the subtitle is Empower Kids with a Great Work Ethic. All those little books are step-by-step, developmentally appropriate from age 2 to age 17, activities you can give kids, and there's 9 or 10 per age group, that teach that character trait. And in the 5 to 7-year-old age grouping, I say teach them to clean the bathroom. Mm. First of all, those rubber gloves go up to their clavicles at that age,
yeah,
so it's
exactly.
really hard for them to get anything on them, and they love wearing gloves.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, and Kelly, this is really for you because we're both raising boys,
yeah.
they start to pee a lot straighter after they've cleaned a bathroom.
Oh, I love it.
Brilliant. Because I literally, I just went into my older son's bathroom and I said to my husband, looks like a prison in here. Like, it was disgusting. Like the...
And smells like one too. Oh,
yes.
Yep.
So that's, I love that. I'm going to utilize that.
That's great. And isn't it, developmentally, children in that age group of like 4 to 7 or 5 to 8, they're very industrious. They actually want things to do. They like also to be helpful. I think so many parents miss opportunities to give their kids mm-hmm. something to do in the workload.
Right, exactly.
That's really helpful. And I just say that that's also part of being a family community. We all have
yep.
tasks we have to contribute. Is that fair?
Yeah, and I would say one of the opportunities you're missing, you know, a lot of parents I know of kids in that elementary school and preteen age, they worry. They think, well, when my child's a teenager, will they want to spend time with me at home? Will we still get that family time even before they fly the nest?
Mm-hmm.
Will they still want to be with us? And there was a great study that showed, and I quote this to parents of teens all the time who are hesitant to give them more things to do, hesitant to hand them chores when they already have homework and practice and all these other things. This study asked teenagers to say if they had, and the study called repetitive, meaningful contributions to the household, but we call those chores, right? Mm-hmm. And then it asked the kids, all of them, whether they had those or not, to rate how many hours a week of their free time, their uncommitted time, they chose to spend with their family. And they found this correlation of kids who had chores spent more than double of their free time with their family, not doing
wow.
the chores, not doing their homework, not eating meals, chose to spend double the amount of time with their family. Because to your point, Dr. Deborah, when you have chores, you know you matter.
Mm-hmm.
You are necessary. We all need to know that we are needed.
Yes.
So I have a curious question for you, because when Tiffany was younger, I was against actually giving money for doing chores. I know a lot of my friends, they put their kids to work by
yeah.
giving them their allowance. I just didn't want, I said, you know, you're going to have spending money in your life, but I didn't want to make the allowance contingent about doing something that was valuable for the family community. Is that wrong? Is it better to give
money? No, I totally agree with you. And here are the two reasons I do. First of all, if I'm paying my child to do their chore, there will come a day, and I know because if I were being paid, I would say this too, there will come a day where it is not worth the money. You go ahead and keep your
$5. Yeah, right.
I'm not cleaning that bathroom or doing that laundry. So I don't want them to have the sense that they could quit.
Mm-hmm.
But the other point is the one I think you were making, which is we don't do chores to get paid. That sets kids up for a feeling of betrayal as an adult because you don't get paid to do your chores as an adult, but also because we are contributing to our family. This is part of being in the community of our home.
Yes.
And that is, not only does it make kids understand that they are crucial as opposed to just wanted, they're needed. And
mm-hmm.
that really adds to self-esteem. It also, every single thing I want my child to be able to do when they leave my home, they have to learn to master in my home.
Right. Absolutely.
And so I never, and as a mom of 4 sons, I may be especially cognizant of this, never want to hear from their life partner later, did you know that your son can't even anything?
That's going to be my future daughter-in-law. Exactly.
Okay, so on behalf of Kelly here,
I
have a question for you. On your behalf. So
sure.
I don't think you do give your kids chores, do
we
you?
We do.
You do now?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, we do.
Okay.
But I have a more question on independence, actually, if I can ask you about this. So my older son, he's just...
Yeah, my favorite.
Oh, good. So he's 9, and he's more of like a homebody. That's just kind of his personality. And I joke with him, and I actually said this to him one time. I'm like, you know, Remy, if you could still be in my womb, would you? And he said yes. And I'm not even kidding you. Like, he just
100%, mom. And good idea.
Yeah. And so, like, he just, and so I actually have been trying to kind of push him out of the nest. I said to him, a couple of his friends were going to sleepaway camp this year. I said, oh, do you want to go? No, absolutely not. I don't want to leave you. No. And I'm just wondering if there are certain things, because I know I'm not alone in this. There's got to be other kids out there who just kind of, that's their personality. They're kind of a little more anxious and scared to leave and try new things. So yeah, I'd love to hear your feedback.
Absolutely. So I want to say two things, and one is just going to be a personal mom to mom anecdote of encouragement, which is my eldest son was very much like that at 9 and 10 and even 11 when his best friend went to overnight camp and they did everything together. He said, why would I want to do that? And the college, the university that is 6 blocks from our home was his plan. He would live in his bedroom and go to that university if he was ever lucky enough to be accepted. And that same child of mine actually went voluntarily, his own idea, to spend a year abroad in sophomore year of high school.
No way.
So developmentally, that is something that not only in my own family, but with lots of kids, I have seen change as they get through middle school and get more confidence and more interest in the world around them and more a sense of who they are as separate from us.
Okay.
But
that's good to know.
That's not true for every kid. So I don't mean to say, oh, you don't have, you know, it's not right. Like we were talking about earlier before our interview about this idea. Deborah, you said that you had a friend who said she won't be doing this when she goes to college.
Right.
And, you know, and I just saw a great post from a mom recently who said, I just dropped my daughter off for her first day of college. And good news to all the parents of young ones out there. She didn't need a pacifier. She didn't use a bottle and she wasn't in diapers.
And so that's really funny.
It isn't as clear cut as that, because some kids are naturally more cautious, more homebodies, and we can't change their blueprint.
Right.
Kel, you must be familiar with all the research out there that shows that when a baby before 6 months cries, we should just pick them up, right? We build them stronger if we just respond right away and really give them that loving reassurance that we've got them, we get them. And that's the same for kids with any kind of going away from us anxiety. Pushing them to do it before they're ready in this developmental stage of 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, it doesn't do them any favors.
Okay.
It's not like throwing them into the water and being like, see, you didn't drown.
Yeah.
That's not helpful. That builds mistrust. It builds more anxiety. It can undermine self-esteem. So pointing out the things that he does that show maturity, that show autonomy, even decisions he's making that show maturity and autonomy that he didn't have, or an interest or a food he likes that he didn't used to like, I would encourage you to point out his own development to him in a, I really enjoy how you're changing kind of way. I love who you are and I love getting to know you as you get older, so that he will start to get the idea that his tastes and his opinions may change and that you're open to that.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, I love that.
So Dr. G, I've encountered a lot of parents who seem to live vicariously through their children. In other words, they set up their children's lives to do the things that they didn't get the opportunities for. And sometimes it seems to be the detriment of the child, like a child who doesn't want to play soccer. And, you know, the dad was an almost professional soccer player, but didn't make it, and pushes and pushes and pushes his son to continue on in that vein. What do you say to those types of parents, how to give them some relief that they don't need to do that to their kids?
I think that this happens a lot when a parent either just feels that they just missed the mark in something or got a ton of joy from something and therefore wants to see their kid have that same opportunity. Even if it's something as simple, like Kelly mentioned, overnight camp. Mm-hmm. I was an overnight camper, and so was my kid's dad. So we were like, you guys, overnight camp is the bomb. Mm-hmm. You should totally go. As it happens, our kids were in, but for parents whose kids aren't in, what we have to remember, and the calm I would try and give those parents, is to say, I get that soccer, for example, seems like the answer to you, but I'd like you to just take one step back and look a little more at the big picture and think, what is it that you got from soccer that you want to encourage your child to get? Because if what you got was a team, or what you got was pouring, or what you got with self-confidence, or what you got with a feeling of accomplishment, whatever it was, then speak to your child about that. I felt like my high school years were tons better because I had this opportunity to feel like I was a part of a group that always had my back, et cetera, et cetera. And I'd like that for you. So what thing might you do where you could get that and you'd be really excited about the activity?
That's
beautiful.
So
I
smart.
Love that. I love that. What about kids who start things and then never want to finish them. What do you say to the parents in those situations?
Exactly.
Another very common experience.
Yes.
Yeah, what I would say is the first time this happens, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Okay, so you have a kid who says, gymnastics, I have to, or let's actually pick something, hockey, something with lots of gear. Mm-hmm. So that you have to get up very early in the morning and is super expensive. So hockey, I have to do hockey. I saw a hockey game. It looks like the most amazing thing. I love this. And you're like, oh, I wondered what my kid's thing would be. Okay, it's expensive, but we'll do it. And you buy the size, whatever, everything. And you go out there. And after two practices, your kid's like, oh, no, no, I don't want to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That time, that first time, I think it is okay to be like, okay, but I'm not doing this again. So the next time your child wants to sign up for something, then you have to, at their developmental level, best you can, explain what they would be committing to. You're going to have to go for 16 practices and 8 games before you'll have an opportunity to stop. Do you understand that even if you don't like it, even if it's hard? And then I would say you have to have the 90-10 rule. 90% of the time you say you have to stick with it, just like school. It's not an option not to go. You made this commitment. There's something to be gained from this or learned from this, even though you're not loving the actual activity itself. And 10% of the time you're flexible and compassionate enough to take a step back and look and be like, yeah, this coach is really bullying and that's really toxic. Or you are overscheduled and that's damaging for these other reasons. Or you're missing this family thing we didn't realize you would have to miss, and that doesn't fit our values.
That makes sense. Yeah. And what if you have a child who like doesn't want to do anything? Like, do you push them to do activities, or is it like, well, they'll eventually come to you when they're like, hey, you know what? I'm interested in this.
This is a good chance to ask that same question that I would ask the parent who wants their kid to be involved in a particular thing. I would say, what do you want your child to get? What's the character trait or the life experience you're hoping they get? So we have a rule with each of our kids that every season they have to be doing something that is physical fitness related, which ironically could be they could go to our local community center and use the treadmill, now that most of them are old enough to, for, you know, 45 minutes, 3 times a week. It doesn't have to be a structured thing. And ironically, baseball doesn't count because it's almost no physical activity at all. So at least at the level my kids have tried to play baseball.
Yes.
So for that, that is simply about building a habit of exercise and using your body.
Okay.
So you might say, hey, it could be any one of these 24 things, but you got to pick something.
Yes.
And it can be something solitary. I have a child who hates to be on a team because it drives him crazy to depend on people his age to give their best, because it's his perception that they just don't. Mm-hmm. So he finally had to join something. He's tried cross country and swimming and track and tennis, these things that you can do where you're part of a team, but it really just depends on your own effort.
Right.
And those are a better fit for him.
That makes sense.
I love that.
Me too.
Yeah. So if what you want, for example, if you're like, no, my kid has to play an instrument because I think it'd be really good for them, then you say that. You say, hey, I get it. But just like I want you to take a language when you're in school, or you have to have math in your curriculum, whatever it is, you say, it's a part of our family philosophy that learning something about reading music and starting to play an instrument is valuable.
Yes.
You got to do it. But I wouldn't require too many of those things because kids need downtime.
Yes.
They need, like Deborah said, that opportunity to be bored and then figure out how to solve it.
I totally agree with that.
What about the annual family vacation when the 16-year-old says, I can take care of everything at home. I can drive. I don't want to go.
I remember saying that when I was 16.
Totally. What I would say is nice work if they can get it. Right? I mean, if they can talk you into that, I mean, I think it means you probably never saw a movie in the 80s or 90s about teenagers, but okay. There is value to the habit of spending time as a family. And what I'm seeing as my kids get older is vacation is sometimes the only time. As I see my friends with kids who've gone on beyond high school and have gone off to do military or job training or higher education, sometimes vacation's it. So you got to stay in the groove, even if it's a staycation or a local vacation, of taking some time off from work, off from school, to do stuff together as a family. But my kids are 9 through 16, and I can tell you, planning time that everybody enjoys is too high a bar.
That's
a bridge too far. So instead, what I'll do is I will, assuming we can get 4 days of vacation time together, I'll set a budget for each day and I'll give each kid a day to plan.
Love it.
And we will all enthusiastically do what they planned.
I love that.
And like real emphasis on enthusiastically, good attitude, if they do what the other kids plan.
Oh, I love that.
That is beautiful. And I love that enthusiastically, too.
And actually, it's been pretty cool to do that around our home. We've had a couple of times where there was no way it was in the budget for us to leave to go anywhere. But it did manage. It did mean that we could spend a little extra on what we would do just in our own area. Mm-hmm. And we found stuff we didn't know about. One of our kids dragged us on every piece of public transportation that exists. And another one of our kids said, congratulations for spending the entire day in our yard. But he set up this super cool obstacle course. Like,
that's awesome.
They get to show, and that way they know for sure they get one day of doing stuff that they like to do, and we have to do it with them.
So I
wanted to add one thing. It seems also really crucial that the couple, if the parents are an intact family, that they both role model that, because I know so many couples where the guy will say, well, I'm just doing that for her. Why does she, I have to be happy about it too? Yeah, kind of you do, because why bother doing it? She's just not going to get any joy from it then, or vice versa, where she says, well, I hate doing that. I just go because, you know, he wants me to. Yeah. Well, that's not really enjoying it. I think when couples don't model that, it's hard.
I mean, I think that kids are really cognizant of the fact that faking emotions is not really valuable, but not complaining about it, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's something that we get pretty lost in our society, is this idea that how we feel justifies how we behave. And that's not true. How we feel matters. But to most people in most situations, how we behave matters a lot more.
So good. Well, this is a perfect segue. I was going to ask you about complaining. What do you do if you have a child who constantly complains?
Probably I get super whiny and complain back for a little while, but it doesn't really work.
No.
It just feels good for a minute.
Exactly.
That catharsis of turning around and just complaining right back at them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that kids can be really surprised to discover that smiling can make you feel a little bit happier. And there's a danger in asking our kids to fake an emotion that I want to stay well away from. I want to be really clear that I'm not asking my kid to lie and say they're feeling something they're not feeling or to squash all their own feelings. I'm just saying, I'm going to give you 7 minutes of my undivided attention for you to give me everything negative that you want to say about this. In exchange, we're going to go do it. And you're going to be done complaining about it. And you're going to make sure that nothing you do steals joy. We have a phrase that we use at our dinner table. Don't yuck somebody else's yum.
Mm, oh, I like that.
Yeah.
So that's a good idea. So it's like, all right, get it out on the table. Let's have it. Let's hear it. And then now we're going to do it. And that's it.
Because I don't have to stop.
Uh-oh, we're losing you.
Come in here and tell me how hard something is. It's it for you.
We're losing you a little bit. It sounds like you're coming in and out.
Oh, no.
Okay, now you're back.
Nothing. I haven't moved a muscle. But I've really been careful with my kids to set up that they can tell me any feeling. Mm. I don't see it as my obligation to fix their feelings either, though.
Right. That I can get into that, too. I mean, you know, in all honesty, because it's like it's uncomfortable for everybody and you just want to fix it. But yeah, it's a good reminder that like, right, our job is not to fix their feelings. It's to acknowledge it, but not to fix it.
Would you consider that complaining a lot is a version of entitlement to some degree?
It totally can be. It really depends. You know, if my child is complaining, you know, it has definitely happened to me that we've been leaving on an outing and one of my kids has said, hey, we were going to get me new sneakers because I grew out of my sneakers. And they did legitimately grow out seemingly overnight of their sneakers, but there isn't time before we're going to do what we do. So if they spend the entire day complaining about the fact that their toes are smushed and their feet hurt, I don't think that's entitlement, but it sure is naggy after a while and really hard to listen to. And so even if it isn't a sign of entitlement, it still can steal the joy from everybody else's day.
Right.
So what would you say is pure entitlement? How would a parent identify that in a child?
Entitlement is this idea that, I guess I would say that complaining is entitlement. You could define it as, I deserve better because I'm me.
Mm. Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
And so, I'm just, to borrow something from Garrison Keillor, we're all good looking and above average. And that idea that everything this might be okay for someone else to put up with, but because I'm me, I shouldn't have to. You know, this line is really long. Well, people have waited in long lines before for something that their sibling really wanted to do. Let's find a way to make it fun. No, I don't wait in long lines. That's entitlement. That, however a child might express that, whether they're 5 or 15 or 25,
right,
there are lots of ways that we find to express that. And I think that we all have that urge to say, hang on, do I have to do this? Do I have to put up with, somebody else might put up with this, but do I have to? But what matters is not our first instinct, it's what we do about it. If we then say, oh, this is a really long line. We waited in the long line for the last ride you wanted to go on. Can this be the last long line we wait on today? Mm-hmm. As opposed to just, no, I'm not doing it. I'm going to ruin the afternoon for everyone.
Right. Got it. Yes. It's like deserving more than one fair share.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And what do teens really want from adults in their lives?
Oh, I love this question because I got the opportunity to ask this question of a group of teenagers on stage in front of about 1,000 parents and educators in Kentucky.
Wow.
And I got to interview some freshmen and sophomores in this very cool program that the state of Kentucky has called Gear Up. And I asked them, and what they said over and over and over again is that they wanted someone who would listen and care what was happening to them. Mm-hmm. This one girl put it really, really well, because I had just stood for 20 minutes in front of this audience and said, we are doing too much for our teens. We're robbing them of the opportunity to try and solve their own problems. And one of the adults, you know, that I brought the students up on stage, and one of the adults said, but they come to us and they ask for help. And I said, well, they come to us. That's amazing and wonderful when they do, and they often do. I'm not sure they're asking for help, but let's ask them. So I turned to these students and I said, when you go to an adult with a problem, what are you asking for? And this one girl synthesized everyone else's ideas really well. She said, when I go to an adult, I'm not looking for instructions. If I wanted instructions, I'd go to YouTube.
That's great.
So here's what's interesting. The whole audience laughed, but while she was talking, I looked up on my phone or on my computer and I projected on the screen. On YouTube, I think as adults, we think of YouTube instructions as like, how do I change a tire?
Yeah.
Or there's a weird noise in my washing machine. But if you look on YouTube and you search, how do you break up with your best friend? You will get hundreds of hits of instructions about how to break up with your best friend. YouTube has instructions for tons of things. So she said, I don't want instructions. If I wanted instructions, I'd go to YouTube. And I said, okay, what do you want? And she said, she looked at the other kids on stage and she said, we want to know that somebody who loves us cares what's happening to us and thinks we'll be okay. Mm. And she got head nods from all over the auditorium from the students who are there.
So is it the type of thing, if a teen is coming, because I imagine there's a lot of parents out there who are listening, if a teen comes to you and says, oh my God, you know, I'm so upset. We'll use the best friend example. You know, I don't feel close to my best friend anymore. And, you know, what should I do? Do you just kind of turn it around on them and kind of like use the active listening, like, oh my God, I'm, you know, that sounds really hard. What do you feel like you should do?
So the first step is absolutely validation without lying. So if your kid is going through something and you just don't get why they're having such a hard time with it, don't say, oh, I would be this upset too if you wouldn't, because teens are the best lie detectors out there. So the first thing to do is to just reflect back to them. I see or I hear that you're saying that you just feel awful. You're feeling embarrassed or ashamed or frustrated or nervous or jealous or whatever the negative emotion is. And that's really hard. I have, if you have, I've felt that way in my life. I hate that feeling. And then just take a breath, because they might be done. That might be all they really wanted. Mm. If they ask you again, what should I do? Then it really depends on the situation. If they're in a life-threatening situation, and 2% of the time our teens are in life-threatening situations, mm-hmm. there's somebody has an eating disorder that they're really worried about, or there's substance use involved, or there's oppressive bullying going on, or there's a mental health struggle. There are life-threatening situations our teens can get themselves into, and they really need us to jump in front of them. But 98% of the time, they need us to show empathy without fixing it for them, without intervention. And so in that case, you say, well, tell me what you've already tried that hasn't worked.
Mm-hmm.
That gives them a chance, and it saves you from looking like an idiot when you say, well, do this, and they say, I did that, it didn't work.
That's very smart. Yes.
So you say, what have you tried that hasn't worked? And they get to tell you more about it. And then if you have the time and the patience, say, what else are you thinking about trying?
That's really smart.
Because what I want from my kids' friendships is for them to learn about what friendship means to them, what it's for, and how they want to be in a friendship and what they want from other people. I don't need them to still be best friends with this particular kid 40 years from now. Right. I need them to learn and hone their friendship skills.
Yes. And for those parents who are not lucky enough to have the kids come to them, but they can tell their teen is troubled, but they're very quiet, they're shut down, they don't want to talk. Any thoughts on that?
This is something that I've asked teens about over and over again when I work with them. And what they say is, be respectful, but don't give up. Because they said, usually we are testing you. We think you don't really care because we think we're not worth caring about, which many of us can remember that feeling in ourselves or in our peers at that age. And so we think we should just push you off. And you will, for most of us, wear us down eventually. So if I say nothing, I don't want to talk about it, it's okay to retreat a little bit, but come back to me 15 minutes later, 15 hours later, a day later. So and tell me really clearly, I hear you saying that there's nothing wrong. I hear you saying that I'm reading and where there isn't something happening. But I got to tell you, my instinct says you're struggling and your struggle matters to me.
I love that.
And just keep using language like that and saying, I am risking frustrating you, angering you, because I love you so much. I get that it's hard. I know I might be wrong, but I can't let it go because you matter so much to me. And just keep using that language, because you aren't going to make anything worse.
Right.
And you have such a high chance of making it better.
Oh,
that's wonderful. I want to talk about bullying a little bit. You know, I think a lot of people would be shocked to ever learn that their own child is actually the bully, right? We have so much news and press now around people being bullied. But what if you actually have, what would be some of the signs that your child might be bullying someone? And then what do you do?
Okay. First, I just want to say most kids bully somebody at some point. And so when I work with educators and camps and places and after school programs, I try to get them out of the language of saying bully as a noun, because a bully is a villain. And once your kid is the villain, you have to jump in front of them and make sure nobody labels them that way. You can't address the behavior. But anybody who's raised more than one child at a time in a household knows that kids do try out bullying on each other a lot in their home, and certainly in other settings, because bullying is leadership skills with bad intention.
Oh, that's a great definition.
Right? Bullying is saying, I think I can get somebody to do what I want them to do. Well, if what you want them to do is help decorate a classroom for a teacher's birthday, then it's leadership. But if what you want them to do is decorate somebody's locker that they wet the bed, then it's bullying. But it's the same skill set. So you can see that kids who are trying to be leaders and trying to make their social situation come out the way they want it to at that moment often will try bullying. That means most of our kids have done this. And if we are blind to it, we can't help. So what I say often to parents is, first of all, make sure that when you say bullying, bullying is actually what you mean. Bullying has a definition. Bullying is a behavior that is repetitive, intentional, harmful, and has something to do with an imbalance in social power. Somebody who has a little power over someone else. You could be two peers in the same peer group, for sure, but it could also be a coach or a teacher or an older kid or a younger kid, right? The baby, the family can sometimes bully folks because they have some power. So make sure it's actually bullying, because we have a tendency, I think, in our society to label somebody who was thoughtless or mean for a minute as bullying when it isn't repetitive or wasn't intentional, those kinds of things. Once you notice this behavior, I don't want parents to freak out, just like I don't want parents of toddlers to freak out when their kid hits, because most toddlers hit.
Right.
But we don't say, oh, this is developmentally normal, let's take a picture for grandma. We say, this is developmentally normal, but it is not acceptable. We don't hit. And that's what matters. What matters is what the adults in that person's life do next. So if I'm in the car and I'm driving a carpool of kids and I hear somebody say, well, if you wear that tomorrow, don't expect an invitation to my birthday party. Then I'm hearing bullying. And if that's my child, I owe them a conversation and maybe a consequence. Because just like when they were two and they tried hitting when they were frustrated, somebody has to jump in and be like, oh, no, 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 no. This is what that is. And we don't do that. That's not acceptable.
Love it.
I want to go back to the kind of the toddler and little bit further just with my younger son. I would love your thoughts about kind of attention seeking behaviors and what to do. My 5 year
old. My own or someone else's?
Mine. Come over to my house. Because, yeah, I absolutely think there's some attention seeking with my son, and kind of, is there sort of a one size fits all? Because if so, I need it.
I guess what really matters is not that he wants your attention or he's trying to get it. It's just how. Everything is about how with okay. our kids. I bet that if your son colored you a picture to show you when you got home, that's attention-seeking behavior, you'd be like, oh, that makes me feel really special that you were thinking about me when I wasn't here and you made something for me. Thank you. So it's not that he wants your attention. It's that he's probably discovered that causing his older brother to scream in pain is a really quick, effective way to get your attention.
Yes.
Or spilling the olive oil all over the kitchen floor or something else that you don't want him to
yes,
do.
Yes, completely.
Are you living in Kelly's house?
Exactly. It's so funny because those two things exactly have happened. So, yes. Okay, but so do you just direct it or yeah?
Kelly, I'm not saying your kids aren't special and overachievers, but those are pretty common problems.
Good. Well, I feel a little bit more normal. But what do? You just like direct it the other direction or and how?
So he gets two things. He gets first a consequence for, you know, poking his brother with scissors or that's just my house maybe, or spilling the olive oil on the floor. And then a conversation about here's what I think you wanted. And, you know, this ties nicely into the bullying conversation we were just having, because when kids bully, what I want to do after we say, hey, that does not fly, you need to make that right, you can't do that, is a conversation about what were you trying to accomplish?
Mm-hmm.
Right. What was the thing you wanted? And if you can get even a toddler, even a preschooler to say, I wanted you, mommy.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you have to say, I think you wanted me to come over and talk to you. I think you wanted my attention. I think you wanted me to put down my cell phone or whatever it is.
Yep.
Right. And when your child endorses that, when they're like, yes, you say, okay, can you tell me 5 different ways that you can get me to do that without getting yourself in trouble with your behavior?
That's wonderful.
That's beautiful. And you know what? We're running out of time. I think we have time for one more question, and then we'll, of course, want to promote everything you have to promote. Just maybe state a little bit about what do you do with a child who's a prankster?
Well, are they
or a husband
child
that's
of
a prankster?
Because that's going to come right by it, honestly. You know what? Deborah, your question is so good because it might not be pranking. It might be sarcasm that one parent uses and the other parent finds distasteful, especially in a child. It might be cursing that a parent, and I'm raising my hand here, does that the other parent finds distasteful. There's all kinds of behaviors that are going to look fine on our 16 or 20-year-olds that don't look and might even be cute on our 3-year-old, but aren't so great on the 12-year-old or on the 9-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you conversation that says, is this something that's going to make other people think our kid is a bad kid? I'm going to use, if it's okay, I'm going to use cursing as an example because I hear about this more from parents than pranking.
Mm-hmm.
The rule in my house is not you may never curse. The rule in my house is you may never curse when an adult or a younger child can hear you.
Mm.
Because I don't need my kids to never swear. I need them to never swear at the wrong time.
Right.
And I've said to them, even if you're the best kid ever, if an adult hears you swear, they will make an assumption that you're a bad kid. And I don't want people assuming you're a bad kid because then you're going to have a much harder time living your life the way you want to in our community or in your school or on your team. So just being really clear that I get that this is something that's interesting to you, but if you can't figure out the right timing, you're going to have a consequence. Or I'm just going to say, sorry, you don't get to do this at all because you're not developmentally ready to show the judgment you have to show about it.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have a
It's like a privilege, right? Oh. And so you could go to your pranking partner and say, hey, if you do, this is something I like about you, but our kiddo is using this at all the wrong times, and it's really leaving a bad taste in my mouth or a bad impression on other people, or it's hurting people. He just doesn't have the maturity to use it yet. So can you make a deal with him that you guys only do this together, or that he waits to run his ideas past you, or something where he has some sort of oversight? You know,
right?
That's awesome. I used to give myself a quarter fine every time I swore inappropriately. Tiffany loved that.
Oh, I don't have that kind of money.
Full.
I just do not have that kind of money.
Either do I. I'm like a sailor. Oh my God,
okay.
We loved having you, Dr.
So
G.
So much fun.
Oh my God. So your book is "Get the Behavior You Want Without Being the Parent You Hate." And what's your website for our listeners?
AskDrG.com.
Perfect. And it's doctor spelled out, right?
Yes, actually, both work now, I'm happy to say.
Oh, cool.
So okay. That got you here.
Perfect. Oh, that's hey. Wonderful.
What a delight. Thank you so much and such valuable information.
Oh, my God, you're just wonderful. I amazing. Wish you could live with me, and I'm not kidding.
Well, I want to have you on again.
Yes. I come along with four boys who eat a great deal, so you might rethink that after a little while.
We'd have six boys. It's all good. Well, thank you so much.
Yes, you're, for sure.
You're a gem. Really appreciate it.
Yes. Okay. So go ahead and check out her
thank
website.
Thank you both so much. I had such a good time.
Yay.
Sure.
Yay. All right. So next week we have Dr. Adam, the author of Driven to Distraction.
Yes. So that'll be really interesting. I think it talks about technology and how it's making us all distracted, which I think we can all relate to.
What are you saying? I was just on my phone.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Completely.
All right, everybody. We love you. Have a great week.
And follow us on Instagram at twoshrinks.com and our Facebook page, Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show. And yeah, have a wonderful week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.